Well, it's a good thing I'm not late today.
Yeah, not at all. Also, nope. this thing doesn't make any noise when somebody else hops in the channel.
I know, it's kind of scary, isn't it? Me, yes. Greg, and Gearc all showed up at the same time.
It's almost as if though you're the same person.
No, it may be that I just have voice control over over Greg.
Therefore making you the same person. That's
and I'm Chris, and this is Jay, and this is Grumpy Dungeon Masters, and I'm not 34 minutes late. Let's go.
That is the most terrifying intro as of yet. It's really creepy.
Awesome.
What's up,
so anyways,
buddy?
I'm excited for tomorrow. That's when the Dark Alliances game comes out.
Oh, finally. Now we can play it and hate on it.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I'm going to play it and I'm going to hate on it.
Did you pre-order it already?
No, I'm just going to download it on Steam when it comes out tomorrow.
Well, you can buy it right now and you get all cool stuff.
Well, that's fair. I'll probably buy it tonight and have it pre-downloaded, at least whatever I can. If you remind me, of course.
I forgot to send you the Emule link. I just sent it to you.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
I'm not starting over.
No, I wouldn't be starting over either. I'm just going to click the link. Probably not edit this out because, well, I'm lazy and but yeah. Yeah. Game comes out tomorrow. Can't wait.
So do you want to play it on stream?
I don't care. Yeah, I'm fine with it. Yeah. It's either that or Ark or 7 Days or whatever we're playing.
Well, it'd be nice to actually play a D&D-based video game on our D&D-based stream.
An action-based D&D game, of all things, as opposed to Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah. So, tune in to today, technically, when this will come out. Tune in today at twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters and watch us play the Heroes of the Companion Halls.
Yeah.
That's what they're called, right?
Yeah, that's definitely it. The Heroes of the Companion Halls.
Yeah.
I don't know which hall, but probably the one that leads to... Never mind. Just moving on.
It's the hall to the treasure room.
I thought I had somewhere I was going with that, and it just went away.
So speaking of treasure rooms, over the weekend, I had to put a pause on developing my Owl campaign because there was... a D&D celebration for 2021 that they kind of kicked off over the weekend. It kicks off fully, I think, in July, like July 16th or 17th. And it started now, though, because they wanted to basically have a Dungeon Master competition. So stage one is open submissions. Anyone could just submit. The submission that they wanted a complex trap that was unique, original, never been published before, and also tied in a lot of current lore and things that are kind of going on in, I guess, 5e Faerun. So I developed a complex trap and got it published. The trap is Xanathar's Vault Room. And the reason I went with that is because when you were given the instructions for like the submission rules and stuff like that, they mentioned that you had to follow chapter 2, Complex Traps, from Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Yep. And so the second that I read that, my mind's just stuck on Xanathar. I couldn't think of anything else that wasn't Xanathar.
It wasn't because you were creative. It was for lack of creativity.
And I think they're going to run into the same issue where there's probably other people who read it and went, oh, Xanathar, better use him. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming they're going to get a lot of Xanathar puzzles. The base puzzles.
Seems likely.
But what I did find out, though, is that, and this is spoilers to a 5-year-old, to 8-year-old book, Xanathar is the canonical ending to Waterdeep Dragonheist.
Okay.
He's the one that actually gets the Stone of Galore and opens the door or the vault to the Dragon Horde. Now, he and his minions, Xanathar gang, are driven back by the gold dragon that's on the inside. But still, it's interesting to know that he's the one that eventually got the stone and was able to get into that dragon horde.
Well, how do we know? How did you find out that's the canonical ending to that?
It's on D&D Beyond in part of his backstory.
Okay. So I'm curious where they wrote that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, really? Who decided that? I'm not saying they're wrong or anything. It's just, yeah. If you're writing these things with possible multiple endings, and they're actually supposed to be continual storylines that all tie together, where the hell do we actually find the real ending?
Yeah, I guess a lot of the problem, especially coming off of fourth edition, is, you know, how does things end? And I actually complained about that in an article that I wrote on the Grumpy Dungeon Master website about. Crap, what was it about?
I don't remember. We're talking about how do we find the ending? How do we find what actually happened? Oh, you actually have to go to the website to look at what you wrote a few weeks ago. Well, I think getting old, isn't it fucking wonderful? Can't remember anything.
No, it was when I wrote about the Feywild adventure. Because I was complaining about, and I think I complained about this on the podcast too, about how there were no end consequences to anything that's happening in any of these campaigns.
Yes, like you did complain about that on the podcast.
Yeah, the end of the Frostmane. So all that stuff is kind of weird. It's nice to know that, hey, this is the ending to Waterdeep. You know, I think like that should be kind of like as an aside at the end of the book. Like, hey, surprise, you know, Frostmaiden ends this way, and little paragraph saying that this is the chosen canonical ending, or have something where players can affect how the book goes.
It's so interesting. Yeah. So when they write these things, if they were, you know, in order, et cetera, and if the next adventure had, this is what happened at the end of the last adventure, at that point, it's pretty easy to know what the canonical ending was.
Yeah.
But they don't do it that way. First off, most of these aren't even written in the order they actually take place. I mean, you've said multiple times that Icewind Dale is it's a prelude to all of 5th edition. So, you expect to know the endings at the end of novels, but these aren't really novels. They're adventures that people get to play through.
Yeah. It's just really weird that, you know, I found that piece of information, but it did spark my mind a little bit more. So, okay, Xanathar is this super paranoid beholder who has been amassing gold and treasure and magic items and other crazy things.
Yep.
And he got so close to 500,000 pieces of gold that, you know, now he's worried that he's not going to, you know, keep his. So I kind of basically had him go to his trapsmith, which is like Thorvin or something like that, and have him construct a trap that was 100 times greater than the vault in Waterdeep. Thorvin Twinbeard. So I, you know, brought in two NPCs from current, you know, run lore. I used the Waterdeep as kind of like a branching on point, and I designed this trap. So the trap in and of itself is essentially a vault entrance and the treasure room. The treasure room itself you can't get into unless you speak the telepathic password to, and while you're in the vault entrance room, basically you teleport inside. It has forbiddance in all the walls and along the treasure room, so you can't like teleport in or mine yourself way in or anything like that. So I kind of like, okay, the treasure room is there. You can't get into it otherwise unless you speak the password in deep speech. So the whole aspect of this trap is basically the entrance to the treasure room. So the first part of the trap is there's no entrance to the treasure room. There's just none. You have to get teleported inside by the Xanathar bas relief that's on the wall. You speak to it telepathically, As I just mentioned, in Deep Speech, you speak the password and you can teleport inside. Great, cool. That's how you get in. So if you try, though, to like pick the lock on the fake door, or you try to break your way through with magic, or you try to break your way through with some, you know, your arms or pickaxes, the trap activates. And when the trap activates, these little beholder statues that are all around the room start coming to life. And they float around the room, they float towards different players, and they all do different things. So I thought it was an interesting trap, and I got it all drafted up. And
yep.
I don't want to get too far into details, because technically Wizards owns this now. One of the conditions of submitting it. All right. Which I thought was funny, because I submitted for a DM's Guild challenge, and they said, you still own your work. Don't worry. You know, you could publish it if you want, if you don't win, if you don't get chosen.
Not for one of their contests.
For the Wizard contest, I don't own this anymore. It's now been submitted to them, and they now own it, and they can do with it what they want. They can use this in a book
and give me
zero credit.
They're going to write this into Waterdeep to Electric Boogaloo as to what happens down the line. It's going to be the big bad trap at the end of the campaign, and you're never going to get credit. Nobody will ever know your name. Thanks, Wizard. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I tried my best with it. Like I said, I wrote it a couple times. I actually put a header page on it. I stayed under the 1,000 words that was required. And overall, I think it went through. Like, I hope it works. You read it over. What did you think?
I really liked it. I like the idea of the multiple beholder statues floating around, doing different attacks every round on, you know, whoever the hell is trying to break into the vault. It's not overwhelming, but it's definitely dangerous and challenging. You know, you had multiple locks along the way that had to be picked if they didn't know the password. And the entire time, you're going to have all these beholders floating around that they can't do anything to. So they just have to sort of try to survive this long enough for their rogues or whoever to pick these hidden locks, which also require a check to figure out where they're at. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was 8 different locks that had to be picked.
10.
Okay. Yeah. So you're looking at probably 10 rounds, maybe, you know, half that if you get 2 people in the party who can pick locks, which happens sometimes. Or knock spells, things like that could potentially shorten the time, but you're still looking at several rounds of all these beholders trying to kill you.
Yeah. So I kind of used the book itself and the kind of the DC values that it had in Xanathar's. So I didn't have to think of any different values. And now kind of retrospect, it's an 18 wisdom perception to find the failsafe triggers that are hidden in the Sligar or Silgar. Bas reliefs, because it's Xanathar's vault room. Maybe I should have explained this earlier, but it's a 50 by 50 foot room. Across the entrance is this huge bas relief of Xanathar, and that's the one you have to telepathically speak to. And then on either side of the room, there are just other bas reliefs of Xanathar and Silgar in glorifying poses.
Now make sure everybody knows who Silgar is, because that's really the most important thing of this.
It's his goldfish that he loves more than anything else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has boss reliefs carved of his goldfish.
So all the failsafes are hidden there because he wanted, you know, I kind of figured that, you know, hiding it in plain sight, and what's more plain sight than Silgar, you know?
Yeah.
Oh,
I love it. They should be inside of each of Silgar's mouths. Like every one of them should be in the mouth.
It's only 18 to find it, and I took your suggestion about, you know, if you find it the first one, you have advantage on finding the next one.
Yep.
And then the complex track that I took from the Xanathar guide, it had lockpicking there too, to kind of like help break the trap. And it had a DC 23 on picking that lock. And I just copied and pasted that in. And so after I had sent it in and submitted it, I was kind of like, man, that's a hard-ass check. You got to make 10 times.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're looking at level 15 plus characters. That is not that difficult. That's like rolling a 10 most of the time at that level.
Yeah, it is 11 to 16 trap. So
yeah. Yeah, at 11, that might be a bit challenging, but still doable. At 16, that's on average.
Yeah. You can also hit the seal guards and just bash them in and trigger the failsafe that way. But if you did that, then a random beholder activated. So,
yep.
That was bad news. But it was easy doing all the damage stuff because all I did is just, you know, copy paste from, you know, all the beholder stats. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, shoot this charm ray via the beholder stat block, and then everything else from the damaging stuff is just DC 16 because that's what a beholder has, and I just use the damage for that. So it is actually fairly easy to put it together, and so I'm hoping it wins. I'm hoping I get brought on to the second stage. The second stage of the contest is you go live, I think, with them on a stream, and you have to design a dungeon.
Oh, you should you should be up for that for sure.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That right there would have made me immediately not enter. I'd be like, oh crap, so if I win, then I have to go live in front of all these people. I don't know about that. Start triggering all of my my issues.
Oh yeah, I'd probably throw up too. So,
which is so weird because I could sit here and talk all day long and never think twice about it.
Yeah, but we don't actually meet the people that listen to us.
That's true. We already know some of them, but aside from that, yeah.
And you're all great, amazing people.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, your trap was fucking awesome. I like it. I certainly hope you win. And hey, get to design a dungeon. That would be awesome. Maybe that would actually get your foot in the door to writing more for them.
That would be a dream come true.
Yep.
I was talking to not my current job, but in my previous job with my company, they had like this program where you get to talk to PMs and, you know, become better program managers and stuff through that. And speaking of which, the one I got assigned to this year hasn't talked to me at all yet. I should probably email him tomorrow. But anyways, the one I had previously was, you know, it was actually a good PM friend of mine. And he kind of asked me like, you know, what do you really want to do? And it's like, well, you know, I really like doing the Dungeons & Dragons stuff. And I kind of went off on a tangent. He goes, you really should pursue that as a career. I was like, I could, but I don't want to make any money through it. So
yeah, it takes a long time to be able to make money in that field. Yeah, writing is difficult, and making money writing is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, I mean that's why, you know, the people out there who can and just work straight off commissions and make a living that they can support their families on, it's just, I tip my hat because that's just hard. That's just insanely hard to me.
Yep.
I don't know how I could not exist without like a week to week paycheck, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, some people are lucky enough. They get into a situation where they are able to support themselves for years doing it before they actually start really making money, but it takes time. You know, anything like that takes a long time.
And like, I know like some like book publishers, you know, when you're already famous, like we'll give you $200,000 and write us the next four books and you take the money and run and write the four books in a year and then take a 4-year vacation and,
you know, yes, stuff like that. Yeah, some people manage to do that. R.R. Martin. Yeah. Just say.
I'm a billionaire. Screw your books.
Yeah. Yeah, we're never getting the rest of those books. Which is fine by me because I never read any of them. I just watched the show.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, like I love the idea of being creative, just creating things for D&D. I mean, that's why all of us are dungeon masters. That's why we do it. I ended up finding a few really neat created things that other people had done, and I used them in my game this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So probably my favorite magic item I have ever given out, I handed out this weekend to my players, and it doesn't do anything. Like, you think of magic items as something like, oh, plus one to this stat, you know, oh, plus to this save, you know, I'll let you cast the spell a few different times. No, that's not what this thing does. I handed out a mirror of fashion. So they're in, it's as bad as it sounds. So my players were tracking down this guy who owns a clothing shop. And they had been given a task to find out what the hell he's doing in this secret location of his. And they end up tracking him down. They are tracking down the location, going inside, and they find out that he's just making clothes, but he's using goblins as slave labor to do it, which, you know, is illegal. You know, slavery in the place they're at, it's not legal. So they naturally have a problem with this, and they continue to go through the rest of the location. And one of the things they find is a mirror that's covered up. Like, you know, it's a 6 foot tall standing mirror. And immediately my players are thinking to themselves, oh, this is a mirror of life trapping or some bullshit like that. So one of the characters starts talking to the monk, and you know, he talks the monk into pulling the cloth off because he doesn't want to take whatever magical effects this thing is going to have. And the monk pulls off the cloth. And immediately this thing is like, oh my God, what are you wearing? That is horrible. That is the worst thing I've ever seen. That does not match your color. And then immediately it starts showing him other outfits that he should be wearing. You know, and it's just making fun of the monk the entire time and explaining to him how he would look better in this other color. And it goes on and on. So naturally, every single one of the players has to try this thing out. They end up going through the rest of the dungeon, clearing everything out that was in there. And then they have to take the mirror with them. They're like, this thing is amazing. So they send the monk back to where they were staying at. They get their wagon. They drive their wagon all the way across town and load this thing up and take it in. Mind you, this is like at midnight, so they're taking it through the gates of the city. Fortunately, one of them is a noble and is not, you know, at least known within the city. So when they get stopped at the gates, they're like, the guards are like, oh, you got you a new mirror. All right, go on through. And that's it. That's all it does. It just makes fun of you and tells you what you should be wearing and then shows you what you should be wearing.
That's an aspect that I can never do because I have known nothing about fashion.
I don't either. I just, you know, I winged it. Have you seen how I dress? Come on, man. It's jeans and hoodies for me. I know nothing about fashion, but I've seen enough, you know, movies and TV shows and stuff. I could wing it. And it was amazing. And my players fucking loved it so much they had to steal the mirror.
I've seen enough Drag Race. I know where this is going, girl.
Exactly. Exactly.
Speaking of funny magic items, I don't know if this is one someone published or anything like that, but my old DM friend Sam, he gave out a magic item to our party when we were going through Lost Mines of Phandelver, and it was a mustache that you wore, and it made you look handsome. But if anyone ever complimented the mustache fell off.
Oh no.
So we gave it to the bard, who's essentially Stevie Nicks for all intents and purposes. Just Stevie Nicks walking around with this massive mustache, and she's walking up to people, kind of like twirling it and just like really showing it off. And whenever someone goes, "Hey, that's a nice mustache," it would just fall right off.
Oh my god!
And then she would get sad and walk over and put it on again.
Sounds like it sounds like a cursed item.
It was.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But that was the curse. That was the extent of it.
Yeah. I really love items like that. They don't really do anything except add flavor to the setting in the game. Like, it's so... Those are my favorite magic items.
I think... I'm gonna have to make up some of those for the Feywild campaign because it just works for the Feywild.
Oh, yeah.
Another one he had was a fork of bees. But I've seen that one before.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
One of my favorite things I did when I was playing a barbarian a while back on the pirate campaign we were running, and me and one of the other characters used to prank each other. So I would just buy common magic items and use them to prank him. And like, you just go into, I think it's Xanathar's guide, where he, there's like, you know, 50 common magic items you can just buy for 50 gold a piece. And I just use these things to troll him with. One of them was a plant that could talk. just shit like that. There was something else, like a doll that could repeat sayings. So then I'd say things into it, and it had trigger effects. You know, whenever he walks through the door, it would say, "Oh, daddy," or shit like that.
Oh, no. But yeah, overall, I definitely need to make up some. So we have to put our heads together and come up with some crazy magic items.
Oh, yeah.
I also need to make up some feats, too. And, you know, just to kind of like round out the whole, like, I'm publishing a full adventure kind of thing, you know. I can't think of any good feats to add for this campaign other than maybe some like Feywild specific ones, like, you know, Fey fast talking or some shit like that. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, my suggestion, if you're looking for more feats, look at all the third edition feats.
Well, I don't want a straight copy.
Whether you're straight copying or not, it might, you're going to see, because, yeah. I mean, my God, there's so many of them. You're going to see ones that'll set your mind to thinking. You know, you'll come up with ideas just by looking at these other feats.
Fair enough. And I was looking at the fourth edition book. Mm-hmm. That's why I kind of said, you know, Fae specific ones. The only one I could come up with right now is some kind of feat that would give you, won't give you any kind of ASI. You know, it's like sometimes they'll be like, hey, you could pick one strength or one dex or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe throw that in, but basically just have it like, you know, be something like winged mastery, where you can use your wings as a reaction to disengage and move back 5 feet if an enemy tries to attack you with a melee attack. You know, something like where you're just flapping your wings real quick and you move back. Because it'll be specific to Owl Folk, being the Owl Folk campaign. And maybe also, like, if you're flying in the air and someone tries to hit you with a range attack, you can use your wings to basically, like, shift yourself around and oppose this advantage on the range attack that's being dealt to you. So that's kind of where my mind went with that, kind of like really playing into the fact that this is an owl campaign and they have wings and there's no feats for Arakoka that I know of in 5th edition.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a common race. It's I'm not even...
Yeah.
I don't even remember what book that's in.
Dude, it was the Player's Handbook. What are you talking about?
No, it most certainly is not.
They're right there, page 506.
I mean, to be completely honest, I'm wrong on rules all the time, so fuck, maybe it is. But I'm pretty sure it's not in the Player's Handbook.
The one, though, I looked up in the 4th edition book, and I can... Sorry, Blaze, I know, I had to move you. Because I have to get the book out. Because I was absolutely 100% prepared for all this.
Wait, you have to get a physical copy of a book out? You mean you're just not on one of the websites that you're always using, looking at all the rules?
No, because I have the book right here. So what's
a book?
So this is in the Heroes of the Feywild. These are character options, okay? Which were cool extra things. They were Fey magic gifts. And the one here was Scent of Gold. A favorite trick mastered by gnomes during their days of enslavement, this gift allows you to actually sniff out gold and other treasures. Thieves from the natural world often seek out fey creatures that can bestow this gift, which allows them to quickly locate valuables at the sites they are robbing. And by the way, just to let you know, I work in the technical writing field. I create manuals all the time. I work with creating technical documents, and every single Dungeon and Dragon book is essentially a technical document.
Yeah, more or less.
So editing is a skill that I have. What's funny about this, though, is that the last sentence, which allows them to quickly locate valuables at the sites they are robbing, there's a hard return in the middle of the word locates. So like it goes like halfway through the line, like across the page, and then hard returns down, cutting the word locate in half.
That's weird. Is there a dash after the L? Is it no. Like LOC dash? Okay.
Well, there's still an inch of space to go.
Okay, then. Yeah, that's poorly done.
Well, no document is ever 100%. No book sure. is ever 100%.
Yeah, yeah. I've been reading Battlegrounds. I just finished it, and even I noticed a spelling error in there.
Yeah, it's impossible. But it's just funny when you find them, especially when the ones that I found interesting. So Scent of Gold, it says, you got a nose for gold, allowing you to ferret out hidden valuables. Vague gift. As a minor action, bonus action, for the next 10 minutes, you can smell the presence of gold, silver, and valuable gems within 5 squares of you, allowing you to make a perception checks to locate such valuables, even when they are hidden from view. Okay.
Let's be honest, that's almost completely useless, but I absolutely have a character that I would play that with. Like, I would take that crappy skill just because it fits the character.
So, this is kind of the question I wanted to bring up with you is, I thought the Fae Wild, mm-hmm. Fae in general, didn't give a shit about gold.
Not that I'm aware of. I
knew that they liked silver, because silver hurts, and has more magical properties than gold. Mm-hmm. But gold is a very... prime material plane thing. Using gold as currency is a prime material plane thing.
Well, that thing you read is sort of all over the place, because in one case it said gold, or maybe in a couple of cases it said gold, but it also said valuables.
Yeah, valuable gems. So gold, silver, and valuable gems within 5 squares of you. So silver and valuable gems are always worth everything.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Feywild, there's a literal city made out of just gold. Gold is worthless to them.
Obviously not.
Oh, yeah. They got to use it to repair the building structures.
Exactly.
Foundation sinking. Need some gold bars.
Mean, hey, have you seen the price of lumber here?
Jeez, yeah.
Price of gold. That's why gold is valuable. Gold is valuable on the prime material plane, specifically because the Fae need it for building houses. Holy shit, we figured it out.
I think it's Mithrindian. It's just golden trees.
Yeah, truthfully, I have no idea. I am not well versed on the Feywild of D&D. Now, when you're talking about the Fae, you know, there's the historical information on there's historical stories about the Fae. You know, then there's D&D, Fae. I've been reading all the Dresden Files, which are, you know, they're different as well, yet they still utilize some of the context from the historical stories on them. So, I would have no idea if they value gold, or honestly, if they even value gems or silver, because I know jack and shit about the Fae other than what's in the monster manuals.
My understanding was that they liked silver because silver had this magical property to it. You know the anti-vampire, anti-werewolf, anti-undead to an extent.
Yeah.
Properties of silver. The purity of silver, you know, being the thing. But gold was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, gems are cool because they're sparkly. Because who doesn't want sparkly things?
Yeah, everybody likes sparkly things, and gems tend to be lightweight and valuable.
Yeah. So I was planning on just like, okay, you guys built your characters and you spent all your gold, right? Okay. You can take your gold and it's now silver. And, you know, there's just no real mechanical reason to have gold. But, you know, no one in the Fae, there really isn't a mercantile thing going on in the Feywild to my knowledge. Now I'm using one for my campaign. One of the NPCs is going to be a businessman. He's going to be a business owl. He owns all the shops in the area, like the blacksmith and tannery. And
he also owns a candy store where they only sell lollipops that you have to try to get to the center of.
But I was always just in my mind, like, okay, well, he just basically bartered and traded everything that he needed with the local inhabitants of the Feywild. And now that the town is kind of like half a bridge between the material plane and the Feywild, he's now learned that the material plane uses gold, and he starts accepting gold and at his shops because he needs to just stockpile that for the people who are coming from the material plane.
Sure.
Yeah. So I that's mean, what made sense. That made sense to me, and that's how what I was going to run with it. But that's just my weak excuse to get gold to work in the Feywild setting.
But it might, once again, it might work in the Feywild setting, you know, because I don't know. I'm not going to say it does or doesn't. When the new book comes out, I'm sure it will all be, it'll say whether or not things are purchased with gold or, you know, who knows what the Fey actually barter.
There is another Fey magic gift that I just wanted to bring up. It just felt very on point. It's called Eyes of the Owl.
That seems appropriate.
You close your eyes, but instead of darkness, you see the landscape from the viewpoint of nearby birds. As a minor action, for the next 10 minutes, you can sense the presence of birds within a half mile of you. You can choose one of the birds and see through their eyes rather than your own. You can switch back to your normal sight or to another bird's sight as a minor action. You can't use powers or your special senses, if any, through the bird.
So since they're playing Alkin, can they look through each other? Okay. As long as you're consistent on that. All right. That sounds horrifying. Like, really? You know, they go to the bathroom. No. Well, yeah, bring some of it over. The stuff that you think fits appropriately like that, as terrifying as it is.
Let's see. Who designed was Rodney Thompson, Claudio Pozaz and Steve Townsend.
Okay.
Lead one, and I think he's led something else recently, or was at least part of the crew.
Cool. Yeah. I know Jeremy Crawford's name.
Yeah, and Mike Merles, hopefully.
I have heard the name at least. Probably from you, most likely, because I don't actually know who any of these people are, and yeah. You know me, I don't keep up with this stuff.
Yeah, it's not like you have a podcast about D&D stuff and should know, like, you know, the main D&D players currently.
I am the main D&D player.
No, you're a participant. These guys are the guys that are
all about me.
The top end. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to take some stuff from this, just some ideas, but it'd be interesting. It did seem that they wanted the Feywild to focus on being kind of like fairy tales of old. So mine is kind of based on one as well, too, but spoilers, kind of. So I won't talk about that too much more. So, but yeah, it's going to be interesting.
So one other thing I ended up running through this past weekend.
Gravity Fish?
We're going to talk about your gravity shenanigans before we're done here. I have no doubt about that.
And it'll be the last time forever.
Yeah, it probably will be, as you've proven exactly how busted fucking gravity wizards are. So they're running through that little area I was talking about, the clothing factory. And the guy was a wizard, so he had a couple of different types of constructs that were guarding the place. One of them he had was mud golems, which is kind of neat. I just went online and started looking for stats for different types of golems, because we've all seen iron golems, we've all seen stone golems and flesh and clay, but you can make a golem out of pretty much anything.
I made a snow one for my Everyone's Been Naughty Christmas campaign, and then Icewind Dale stole it. So now it's a snow monstrosity.
Yeah, it's not nearly as cool as the snow golem.
No, but its stats were pretty much exactly the same, which is really weird.
Yeah. Well, if I ever run them online again, it's still going to look like Frosty the Snowman. Just saying.
He shows up later, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's true. You did that separately, too. But anyway, I came across a paper golem.
Okay.
Like, it's just it's considered a tiny creature, you know, tiny construct. And it's AC 13, 7 hit points, speed of 20, and it's got all the golem immunities. and stuff, and it deals slashing damage, which is fucking hilarious to me because it's literally killing you with paper cuts.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're one-quarter challenge monsters. These are nothing for my fourth-level characters. But I also found Paper Golem Swarm.
Okay.
And it's literally what it sounds like. It's a fucking swarm of paper golems. They can occupy the same space as people. So I had the players walk into the room, and they're looking around, and it's a desk, and there's a couple of books sitting on the desk, and there's a small stack of papers sitting on the desk. And as soon as the rogue got close enough and ended up triggering this thing, yeah, all the paper just sort of blows up into the air and then folds itself into the shape of, like, little paper dolls and then just starts fucking him up. It's just so good. Yeah, every round, it rolls to hit and deals, like, 4d6 slashing damage if it's in, you know, to whoever it's in the space with. And then it also had a whirlwind, which I forgot to use, but the air is momentarily filled with paper golems. Each creature within 5 feet of the swarm have to make a dex save or take slashing damage.
Awesome.
All these little paper golems just flying around through the air.
So
I think you should be able to beat this, though, if you just use a gust of wind spell. Like, just fucking blows paper away.
So I Googled paper golem to see if I could find it. And the first result back was a squirrel golem and a lesser squirrel golem.
Oh, I didn't see those.
An origami golem.
Oh, yeah. We got to joking about you about an origami golem for the Oriental campaign. So you might have to send that link to me so I can send it to my DM so he can troll us with that bullshit.
And then it has a couple paper golems. And then it has a weird paper golem, and then it has a pages golem, which is like stacks of like just loose pages that kind of like form a golem.
Okay, yeah.
And then a toilet paper golem, which is just a golem made of toilet paper.
That's how you fight the Golgotham.
Yeah, that's how you fight the Golgotham. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good idea. I'm gonna have to steal that, I think.
Yeah, but I was just I Googled Mud Golem and it sent me to 5esrd.com. They just have a massive database of all of these different monsters. And mind you, a lot of the golems in there, it doesn't say who created them, what company is responsible for them. Some of them it does. It's got Legendary Games and Frog God Games and other individuals. But the paper golem, I don't know who to give credit for to that one, but thank you, because I used the hell out of it. There's another one in here called an Orcus Golem.
Oh no.
It doesn't seem nearly as bad as it sounds. But like it gave me the idea of just having an Orcus Golem. I probably would not use the stats they have. I would just make up my own, something more fitting. It's actually just made out of Orcuses. It's like it's five Orcuses, six Orcuses, one is the body, one Orcus is the or, you know, each of the arms, one Orcus for the head.
That reminds me of the Scarlet Witch villain that basically Tommy and Billy, was it? Like, he's the one that constructed it for those two as figments of her imagination for Wanda. And then, like,
you mean are you talking about Rita?
No. In the
Wanda.
So this guy, I have to find out what his name is, but he was the guy like implanted all that stuff into Wanda. And then when she finally confronted him,
basically, you're talking about her children. You said Tommy and Billy, and I was immediately thinking of fucking Power Rangers since we were talking about combinations of things.
No. But when she fights the villain, what I was trying to get to is that she confronts him and he's standing there in his like alien space armor, and his left and right arms are just Tommy and Billy.
Yes, that is true. I remember that. Holy crap. Yeah. Had her children for his arms.
That's the Orcus Golem.
Patrick Duffy for a leg. we could totally do a Devil Golem or Demon Golem where Orcus is the body. Demogorgon is the arm, like one arm. The other arm is one of the other demons.
Funny enough, I actually want to talk about the Demogorgon today, but may not be able to. May run out of time. Also, further down in this Google list for paper golems is the paper tiger from the MTG card.
Yeah, yeah, that which was an unglued card or one of the unsets, if I recall right.
Artifact creatures, rock lobsters cannot attack or block.
Yep.
This tiger is always quickly to fold.
No, so I actually played very quickly. I played in a tournament against a kid this one time who actually showed up with the paper tiger, rock lobster, and there's a
lizard.
One? Yeah, the scissor lizards. He had all three of the cards, so we actually played paper, rock, scissors to see who would go first.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's the way all it should always go from now on.
Yep. All right, so before we wrap this thing up, let's talk the last time ever talking about Gravity Wizards. So what did you do? What did you do?
So we kind of like going through this, I guess it's kind of maybe minor spoilers for the Xanthoris, the last book in Candlekeep.
Candlekeep, the very last mission. The
level 16 one.
Yep. So apologies, but there will probably be some minor spoilers.
So we're kind of going through this cave, doing things, researching for the bad guy and stuff like that. And we're fighting all the classic monsters. Like there's a purple worm, there's a death tyrant, there's a death knight. Whatever those things that kill dragons are there, the baldrigasts.
I don't know what they're called.
Like they're like 12 legged lizards.
Bahirs?
Yeah, Bahirs. Yeah.
Okay. I guess they killed a small dragon, maybe.
Weren't they made to kill dragons?
They could be. I don't know. It would take a lot of them, though.
No, because they're gargantuan.
Well, I don't think a Bahir is.
Well, anyways. So there's
a
couple of those, and we finally get to the last encounter, and like, it's pretty obvious that was the last encounter. So I've been front loading the simulacrum the entire time. And I've been keeping track of his spells in a separate spell list on a piece of paper. And I had my spells that I had prepped with I called them Gravity Prime. So Gravity Prime had not used any spell slots other than one. Because I sealed the door I made a door in an immovable object because there was a death tyrant behind it. And fuck that shit.
Yeah, you talked about that one on the last podcast.
So that's like the only spell he really used. So we get to the final encounter, and I roll my initiative, and I think I got like a 19. So a couple people went ahead of me. Lair actions happened. I just kind of knew there were lair actions. And then I got to pop off my spells. For some reason, the DM had moved the bad guy behind a pillar. So we didn't have line of sight on each other.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, oh, cool. They can't counterspell me.
Behold gravity. I don't care where you're hiding.
So 40 feet away, I create this 40-foot sphere of just immense gravity, and I cast the Dark Star spell. And I read it off on stream.
Do you want to read it now?
Sure, I'll pull it up real quick.
I mean, it's kind of important to it does matters in the story.
Range 150 feet, a 40-foot sphere. This spell creates a sphere centered on a point you choose within range. The sphere can have a radius of up to 40 feet. The area within the sphere is filled with magical darkness and crushing gravitational force. For the duration, this spell's area is difficult terrain. I completely forgot that it was, but it's difficult terrain. It didn't matter, and I'll explain why in a little bit. A creature with dark vision can't see through the magical darkness, and non-magical light can't illuminate it. No sound can be created within or pass through the area. Any creature or object entirely inside the sphere is immune to thunder damage. The creatures are deafened while entirely inside of it. Casting a spell that includes a verbal component is impossible there. Any creature
that's the important part right there.
Any creature that enters the spell's area for the first time or starts its turn in there must make a constitution saving throw or take 8d10 force damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. A creature reduced to 0 hit points by its damage is disintegrated. Disintegrating just disintegrates you. And so I cast that spell and it went off. I drew the line out there so that you could see it on the map. And then I had, actually before I cast the spell, I had my simulacrum cast Event Horizon. And that's basically, as an action, I emit a powerful field of gravitational energy that tugs at other creatures for up to 1 minute or until your concentration ends. For the duration, whenever a creature hostile to you, which is important because everyone's grouped up around me,
yep. Right.
Starts its turn within 30 feet of you, it must make a strength saving throw. On a failed save, it takes 2d10 force damage, and its speed is reduced to 0 until the start of its next turn. On a successful save, it takes half as much damage, and every foot it moves this turn costs 2 extra feet of movement. So like you mentioned ago, that essentially triples your moving cost.
Yep.
And then you're in a field that doubles your moving cost.
Yep.
So you can't move, even if you did pass, essentially.
Yeah, and it makes it impossible to get out of said Darkstar.
So I cast the spells, I read it off, and I saw Mike, the DM. I just saw his just expression go from happy and cheerful to, oh dear God, what? And then honestly, I shut down the campaign for like an hour. Like no one could do anything.
You sit there for the full minute.
Essentially, that's what we did.
Everything inside there is going to take at least 4d10 damage every round for up to a minute.
5d10.
The one. Oh, okay. Well, you said it was 8d10 earlier.
Yeah,
is what you said.
And then the other one, the Event Horizon.
Oh, right. Yeah, 2D10. And then they're taking that too. Yeah. So they're taking all of that 5d10 every round, no matter what. They can't dimension door out of it because it's Darkstar, so there's no sound, so they can't cast anything. They can't see, so it's impossible to move. It literally defeats just about everything.
One of my players mentioned this and typed this out in the Twitch chat. It's like, hey, isn't it a shame that the spell magic has verbal components?
Yeah, how about that? Yep, dimension door, verbal component, Misty Step. Pretty sure a verbal component, like everything just shuts it down. Most broke ass spell ever.
Yeah. And the funny part is even if it did mess up, I could still do it again because the simulacrum could cast Darkstar. I could have, and Gravity Prime could have cast Event Horizon. Yep. So all in all, we killed the big bad end guy.
For a single spell and one ability.
Yeah. Not to mention there was like another big ass monster in there that I'm not going to spoil that is enough to be a big bad end guy in and of itself. And then the minions that it had in that room as well too were enough to just probably be a hard encounter for the party.
Yeah. Because it's a large spell.
Yeah, but I'm saying is like that encounter at the end, the way they wrote it, is essentially two hard encounters plus a deadly encounter. All rolled into one. There's no way we would have lived. We would have just gotten
or a single eighth level spell,
or a single eighth level spell in one ability. So yeah, I think that all of Wild Mount is forever banned now and forever until the end of time.
Yeah, I have already banned it. It has been banned in my campaign since it was released, and I played a Gravity Wizard. All it took was me playing a Gravity Wizard one time, and I was like, nah, this ain't gonna fly.
And everyone's all like, oh, the Gunslinger, or the Chronomage. It's like, have you seen what the spell does?
Yep. Have you read the Gravity spells? Chronomage is pretty fucking busted too, but not to that extent. Yeah.
And I still didn't get a chance to do my whole use a reverse gravity and throw them 100 feet into the air, and then use reverse gravity again and throw them another 100 feet into the air. I really wanted to do that.
Yep. And mind you, reverse gravity, that's straight out of the PHB. It's a good spell, but it's definitely not busted. It is not Darkstar.
It is not Darkstar, but you take a lot of damage. And then they fall 200 feet, which sucks. And with a gravity wizard, you can accelerate the falling damage, so.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good spell.
Yeah, that was, like I said, it shut down the stream, and it just, like, it dragged on, because, like, what do you want to do? I can't see into the sphere, right? Nope. Okay, well, guess it is ready in action. Shoot the first hostile monster I see.
I mean, I guess they could have just fired arrows in there. Once it hits the gravity, it'll pick up speed. It's going to hit something. It's going to the middle of the sphere.
The worst part was, too, is like when you have that many high-level monsters, though, you can't remember all the ability and all the nuances. And the DM forgot that the big bad end guy had true sight and that one of the monsters in there had blind sight. That would have helped significantly with counteracting the Event Horizon and Dark Star. I mean, not too much, because, like I said, I
would have let them watch your face as they got crushed to death. That's what it would have done.
My wife had a brilliant move. She cast Fairy Fire as a cube, like right on the edge of the Dark Star, so it went in to the Dark Star. And she just blindly did it from this point. And we all knew where the monsters were because it's stream, but she still just blind, quote unquote, blindly did it, caught four of them in there. So how does Fairy Fire react to an area of just absolute darkness?
So when you're reading Dark Star, one thing it said is non-magical light will not affect. So magical light, I would assume, does work.
So does it? This is one thing we couldn't figure out. They just had a DM just figure it out. So you glow in a faint outline and you shed light in a 10-foot radius. So does that light up everything in the Dark Star?
Probably not, but most likely I would have just gone with this, at least me as a DM. Fairy Fire gives advantage. It gives disadvantage. I probably would have just had any attacks, you know, at straight neutral.
The DM let the outline stay, but and just kind of washed away the shining light inside. So we could see the outline of the monsters in there. And that at least gave us something to shoot at. And so then I could start casting spells in there because I can now see a point in space, which is like, the monster's head. So right on top of them. And then I kept casting like gravity sphere and shit behind them and pulling them deeper into the Dark Star.
Yep. Anything trying to get out? Nah, you're getting sucked back in.
Yeah.
Just have the warlock shooting Eldritch Blast at them and pushing them back into the middle.
It was a very fun campaign. I'm very glad that he did it. This next upcoming weekend, he's going to be doing the Christmas one shot that I wrote. He's going to be DMing that, and I'll be playing it. And
awesome.
I don't know what I'm going to play yet. Probably a gravity wizard.
No, you don't play a gravity. You have to play one of the classes you made up, man. Play the reindeer ranger or the the other ones.
My players are doing that. They're doing the side class, the new side classes.
If you want, I can send you the a link to the there's other Christmas classes out there. I have like a dozen of them or so. There's like a woodsman. There's the bard of the College of Festivities. Like there's a whole bunch of them out there. If you want, I'll send it to you.
Send me the woodsman. That sounds interesting. I'll look at that one.
Okay. I'll try to find it and I'll get it to you.
I like I said, I felt very sorry, and I even made a funny picture and posted it on my Facebook so you could see that.
That's amazing.
We'll put it up on our website so you can see it as well too. I'll put up a picture too of the spelling or the formatting error in the Feywild book as well.
Behold, fish gravity.
it was just so broken. It was just like I'm sitting there like the entire time, like, okay, my guy's invisible. He's flying. Not much knows he's there, and even if they did, what are they going to do to him? I'm so far in the back, and I have like 300-foot range. No one's going to attack me. Mislead is an amazing spell, I think. Because you can just make illusionary version of yourself, and then like you send it forward as like a scout. It's just looking around, being annoying.
All right. I think that's enough for this episode. Gravity wizards are broke.
I didn't get a chance to talk about the Demogorgon.
Oh, well, go ahead. Do it.
Next time.
Next time. Next episode. Talk about a Demogorgon if we remember.
If we remember.
As an arm for a demon golem.
As an Orcus. As Orcus on his little tentacle.
Bye, Craig. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Check us out on Facebook at...
There's no at in Facebook. It's just facebook.com/grumpydungeonmasters.
And on Twitter.
That'd be at grumpy_DMs.
And on Instagram.
At grumpydungeonmasters.
And also be sure to follow us on Twitch.
Twitch.tv/grumpydungeonmasters, where we play Rime of the Frost Maiden every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Fuck yeah.